Hey, hey, back with episode 21. It's Comics Generally, sponsored by Combos, the greatest snack on the planet. We're here with Grabsky in his nice office. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great.
Grabsky, well, I should say Grabsky. Mike, this is Mike's been on the show before a couple times. We've been doing for Solo. We talked about science fiction comics, and I think you're on the Ant-Man and Wasp episode.
That's correct. Here. That's correct. That's the last one.
So it's cool. Thank you for having us here at the office. It's really nice in here, man.
Thanks. Thanks to the layer of the abyss.
Yeah, right. It's Mike commented that his office is kind of like the set of SNL for the Asriel the Abyss sketches back in the day.
I work at Cinnabon
with Chris Kattan and Molly Shannon, right?
That's right. And then
Shannon with that black wig on.
Yeah, and then like Jim Brewer plays his like older brother who comes and always torments him.
He's like the Chet.
Shut up, Todd.
Prince of Sorrow.
This is the Comics Generally podcast. Only going to talk about Sandman. What we are going to talk about is our pull lists from last week, just to kind of kick things off. Blake and I both had Guardians number one from Donny Cates on our pull list, and I had Uncanny X-Men Annual number one. Did you have anything besides Guardians?
Aliens Resistance number one.
Is that the one Brian Woods doing that you were telling me about?
Yeah, it's a continuation of the Defiance story.
Now, where does that fall in, like, alien canon? Like, do the comics tie into the movies and stuff at all? Or are they kind of their own entity?
It takes place before Alien 2.
Oh, okay.
In between Aliens and Alien 2. Because
Amanda
Ripley's in it.
Okay,
it takes place after Isolation and the Defiance story.
Oh, wow.
So the game Isolation.
Oh, I didn't even know. I don't even think I realized there was that many Aliens games.
Too many.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot. Most of them not worth mentioning.
Yeah.
They're scattered all over. There's console, but
okay.
a lot of PC games.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Uncanny X-Men Annual was really good. It kind of follows up on the aftermath of Extinction with you finding out, spoilers, that Cyclops is still alive.
Okay.
But this whole issue kind of focuses on him and, like, what happens after he comes back to life and, like, how he comes back to life. Is it really good? Like, it's not something you need to read necessarily leading into, like, Cyclops coming back, but it's a really cool, like, on its own look at him as a character and kind of, like, where he's come from and where he's going to go as a character.
Okay.
So it was a lot of really interesting interactions with him and Kid Cable, which I'm so happy that that name has stuck with that character. I think it's so funny. And I also think it's kind of charming because he is just like he's this like runty, like shithead 20-year-old version of Cable. And you get to see like what a smarmy kind of dick he is.
Okay. Is there any run-ins with Major X?
Oh my god. Not yet.
Okay.
I'm dreading that that's coming out. And I'm dreading that that's a thing. And I know we talked about it last episode. I don't remember if I mentioned it on mic or not. But like, the moment I realized how bad that character design was is when I saw Phil Noto's like variant cover for it. And Phil Noto's like one of the greatest artists Marvel's got as far as like variant covers and things like that. He's got a really like paint, like beautiful retro like painted style.
Yeah.
And he did his best, I believe, and it still just looks like a trash outfit. Like, it just looks like a bad design.
Looks like
and if that,
Cobra Commander with an X on his face.
It really does.
And
if a guy like that can't make your design look good, then I fully believe it's a bad design.
Yeah.
Because, like, the guy draws circles around every... The guy draws and paints circles around, like, everybody, it seems like. Guardians was really good. Guardians was actually...
Book was fantastic.
I was expecting a lot from it. I kind of felt like it exceeded my expectations as far as, like, what it opens up the book to.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways for it to go. I don't know how long he's planning on staying on this book, but I know, like, Venom, Donny Cates also, not like we talk about anybody besides Donny Cates, but, like, I know Venom... He's come out and said, like, he's on that book
for upwards
of 50 issues, which is, in modern Marvel times, completely unheard of.
Yeah.
Other than, like, a couple significant runs, like Jerry Duggan doing Deadpool for...
Yeah, I mean, he was
the longest... 60 or 70 issues, right?
No, I think it was more than that.
And then you had, like, Mark Waid doing, like, 60 issues of Daredevil. Like, those are the two that come to mind for me. And Bendis on X-Men doing, like, 50 or 60 combined issues. But Bendis had long runs on everything. He was Bendis. I don't know. It was super cinematic, I thought.
Oh, no, it was.
And it's interesting knowing he's going to go forward and write the screenplay for God Country, which I guess is unheard of. For the writer of the book to actually write the screenplay for the movie. But it definitely makes me even more excited to see how movie adaptation of that's going
to
go.
I like that they came to him and were like, how about, like, you write it?
Yeah, they asked. Like, I think they asked him. They were like, do you think you could do this? And he just was like, I don't know. Yeah.
And his manager was like, dude, that's, like, unheard of.
Yeah, he called him. He's like, what did you do? He's like, how did you convince him to do that? But if the first issue is any indication, the humor and the tone he kind of sets for that book right off the rip is fantastic. And it even goes so far as to have a post-credit scene, which I thought was really cool. You got a stinger in the comic book because you got the line that you were expecting from someone in this book, which was like, well, I guess we're the ... And you turn the page and it's two full jet black pages that just says Guardians of the Galaxy in like huge white letters. It goes so far as to like have the credits like movie style at the bottom of the page.
And then after that is the big
reveal of the other big bad in this book besides Thanos. Which I'm not going to spoil because I thought it was really good.
No, yeah, don't spoil it.
I thought it was a great reveal.
I wasn't expecting it at all.
Have you been reading anything other than that?
Not right now. I've been catching up on Black Science.
Nice. How is that? I'm way behind.
It's I don't know. It's one of my
favorite
books.
Is it good as ever?
Yeah.
Good.
And then last night I caught up on Manifest Destiny.
I need to read that too. I'm way behind. I was actually just talking about that. I don't know.
Mike, have you ever read that?
I haven't.
It's great.
So it's the whole Lewis and Clark, their expedition for the Manifest Destiny. But what they're doing is clearing the country of like centaurs and things like that, like monsters. And there's these overarching story where there's these arcs. So like the whole arch of like St. Louis has like meaning in what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's this whole overarching thing about like a demon and then all these like mystical monsters that were in the land, but they went through the country killing them all.
Like clearing the way for humanity to
it's and you find out that like they're dispatched by the government to discover like or to suss out the new land, but they didn't tell anyone that like Lewis and Clark are obviously also supposed to suss out all these monsters and stuff. Which
they know.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but they eventually tell their like crew what's going on.
Yeah.
It's a good book.
It's a lot of fun.
That sounds good.
It's kind of one of those untalked about books that
I
think people should be talking about because it's good, but I think it's because of how it comes out.
Yeah,
just
it's
like Birthright.
It's very sporadic, yeah. Oh, but yeah, Birthright's not quite as bad, but they take long breaks.
Yeah,
for sure. Caught up on Fantastic Four, finally. I have one issue more to go. The new arc started recently, which I haven't read yet, but I got through The Wedding, which The Wedding was fantastic.
Okay.
I know you haven't caught up to it yet, so I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but it's one of those things where it's like superhero weddings. You just like they did the Batman thing a few months ago, and it was like, is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? And like, of course, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And then like Kitty and Colossus and X-Men were, is it going to happen or is it not going to? Of course, it didn't happen. And then granted, you got the surprise wedding with Rogue and Gambit, which was actually Donny Cates' idea, I found out.
Was it?
He admitted, that swerve was all him. Because like, I forget who, it was Guggenheim, I think, was writing that at the time?
I don't know.
And I think Donnie threw that out at one of, like, the Marvel retreats as, like, just kind of an idea or whatever.
Mr. and Mrs. X.
And yeah, I need to read that. I heard it's really, really good. Kelly Thompson writes that. She's, like, one of the three on the, like, that was just on the Uncanny X-Men team.
Okay, there's a couple people that told me to read her stuff, and
I want to read it, too, because she did West Coast Avengers recently.
Yeah.
And the lineup is great, because it's all, like, B-team characters. And it's got Quentin Quire, which is, like, one of my favorite X-Men characters. But they got married. Like, it actually happened. And, like, they made sure it happened. and it's not just like a gimmicky, like, oh, Ben's gonna marry Alicia. Like, Ben marries, sorry to spoil this, Ben marries Alicia. There's nothing gets in their way. They actually get to have their moment.
So, most recent Marvel weddings, what can you remember? So you have that happened.
The Rogan Gamble planned ones?
And then before that, Deadpool.
Yeah.
He got married.
Is he still married?
No.
In the books?
No.
I say that.
I mean,
kind of God.
Yes and no.
Oh,
but
right.
Yeah. I mean, they went through it.
Right,
and
yeah.
It was a long story arc, if you think about it.
Yeah, it did kind of go a while, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it went all the way through Secret Wars.
Yeah, you're
so,
right.
I mean, it went a while.
But yeah, it's a great book, and like, I loved Dan Slott's Spider-Man is the one I know the most, I think, at this point, just because he's been writing it for 10 years, and I've been back into comics for, I think, 7 at this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the majority of the time I've been, well, the entire time I've been back in, he's been writing Spider-Man. And he's just one of those guys where, like, when you get him on a character that he loves, I feel like that shines through. And I know, like, he's real divisive. He's one of those guys, kind of like Bendis, where, like, people love him. And then, like, on the other side of the fence, everyone hates him. You know what I mean? Like, he's just a very polarizing dude, I think.
I've definitely heard both sides of that story.
Yeah. But the thing I like about him is that he's not afraid to, like, do whatever. Like, he thinks big with these characters and these stories, and he goes for it. And he does. He's one of these guys where now he's at a point in his career where he can spend 10 years on a book. And, like, people will try and bump him off of it, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
He's just a big enough anchor for the company at this point. So the idea that, like, potentially we could get a run of Fantastic Four out of Dan Slott that's 6, 7, 8 years long, at this point is pretty exciting.
Well, I mean, how long has it been since Fantastic Four was actually a...
3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
4 years since the James Robinson run, I think. And that was the last... I think that was the last thing we heard from him, because Secret Wars ended and then they disappeared. So it's been at least 3 years for sure.
For the main book.
Oh, yeah. Probably about the same amount of time.
I was going to say, because they kind of chopped that book with the last shitty movie. Right?
After the movie kind of shit the bed, yeah.
What are you picking up this week?
Oh, God, what do I have this week? We were just talking about our pull lists. I have Age of X-Men Alpha, number 1. I have... What else is coming out this week? I can't find my list now. What do you have coming up?
So I got Quantum Age number 6, which is part of the Black Hammer universe.
Oh, okay.
I'm behind on it, so I can't really explain too much to people. But that whole universe so far has been really good. Jeff Lemire is killing it, I think, on that one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've got the first two trades of Black Hammer, and it was a book that I was reading in issues when it came out, and it just, with so much stuff, I felt it was one of the books that fell victim to being added to the trade list.
Okay. And then I got Rick and Morty vs. Dungeons and Dragons, which is really fun.
Really?
Yeah, it's really fun. Like, we had that episode, like, I know the basics of it, and they obviously did their homework on the book.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know.
Amazing Spider-Man 14.
That's one of mine, too.
Nick Spencer, Ryan Otley.
I love that the team on that is Otley for an arc and then Humberto Ramos for an arc.
Yeah.
I love Ramos on Spider-Man. Like, I know the dude's style is super labor-intensive, so obviously he's not able to do every issue without it being, like, insanely late. But if it was a possible thing, as much as I love Otley, I would read... If they were just like, you can only read Humberto Ramos on Spider-Man, I'm in, man.
And then the last one for me tomorrow... Well, I'm probably going to pick 4 and 5 up for... What, there's 6 now? For
yeah, 6 is the most recent.
Okay, and then Black Panther versus Deadpool, number 4.
How was that?
Looks fun.
Who's writing it?
Crap, I have to look that up.
Oh, okay. No, no worries. I was just curious if you knew off the top of your head.
It's not off the top of my head. I'm just reading way too much shit right now. I can't remember.
No, I understand.
You should see the stack. It's sad. Most comic book people would yell at me for it.
I think everybody's like that to some degree, whether they want to admit it or not. Like, everyone's probably got at least a book or two where they're like, I really do like it, but I'm crazy behind on it.
Oh, yeah, mine's more than that. But
it doesn't look like there's any big, huge names on that. Black Panther, Deadpool, Daniel Kibble-Smith, Ricardo Lopez-Ortiz, Ryan Benjamin and then Rain Barreto or Barreto.
I mean, it's fun. I mean, the biggest like pop in for a villain was Jack Lantern.
No, really?
Yeah, it's
I don't think I've seen him pop up in anything since Remender's Venom run.
The way they do it though is it's good. Like
really?
Yeah, he's like some government agency made it, like healed him up and they're like, all right, you get a second chance. And he's just sitting there and he's like, man, this sucks because he has like a regular job.
Oh,
and he
really?
Hates it, and then he sees Deadpool dressed as a pink elephant. He's like, it's Deadpool. I think I know him. And he then goes and he's like, I'm going to kill my boss. And like does it in front of this old woman he works with. And
oh, my
like,
God.
Yeah. And then, because it all takes place in Wakanda, so.
Oh, no shit.
Well, that's why, I mean, Black Panther's got the top billing in the book.
Yeah.
It's technically in
the book. Other than that, I haven't been reading a whole lot. I'm kind of anticipating the next big thing coming out for me is Zdarsky's Daredevil, with Chip Zdarsky writing and then Marco Cicchetto on artwork, who he actually did artwork on Greg Rucka's Punisher, which is probably one of my favorite Punisher runs ever, I think. And then that actually crossed over with Wade's Daredevil at the time. Like that and Amazing Spider-Man and Punisher all had like a 5 or 6 issue story where they kind of crossed over with each other. So that's the first time I saw Cicchetto do Daredevil, and he's got a real, like a kind of 90s-ish style, but like in a good way. Like it reminds me of like Tony Daniel and like Jim Lee a little bit, like those guys. But it's always kind of a more dull color palette. Not like dull in a bad way, but it's a lot of like muted colors and
okay.
Like a lot of blues and grays and stuff. And I think normally he colors his own stuff, but I guess on this book he won't be. So I'm real curious. I don't remember offhand who they have coloring the book, but I'm looking forward to seeing what a different colorist brings to the table as far as that guy's artwork goes. And I'm curious what kind of tone Chip is going to take with this book. Because I feel like, you know, ever since Frank Miller, you had this like darker version of Daredevil that kind of carried on over the, I don't know, decade upon decade over all these years. You had Bendis come in, and then Bendis kind of put him through the ringer, and then Brubaker came in, and he put him even more through the ringer. And then Wade came in, and it was like this nice, like, literal bright change of pace for the character, because they brought him back to, like, sunny skies, like, New York, like, bright colors. He's you know, this kind of, like, swashbuckling hero, like, wisecracking. But they kept the darkness, they just treated it. They handled it so much differently than like Bendis and Brubaker did. Like it was so much more internalized and like a more relatable version of the character, I guess.
Okay.
Because like Daredevil's always been a character, obviously, that deals with like guilt and depression and things like that. But Wade made it way more like humanized than I think anybody's really done before. So I'm curious what angle Chip takes on it, and it's one of those things now where I think people are still surprised when they see Chip's name pop up for stuff like this, as opposed to like a book like Howard the Duck or
yeah.
something like that. Because he is so deeply rooted in like humorous stuff. I mean, Sex Cripples is a light, not lighthearted, but it's a funny book. Like there's a lot of jokes to it. And there's a lot of like fourth wall breaking type stuff. And so when they brought him in and he did, I'm trying to think of what the first big book they gave him after Howard was. I don't think it was Spider-Man, but just to use Spider-Man as an example, they brought him in for Spectacular.
I thought it was.
And it wasn't really?
Yeah,
maybe
it was.
Wasn't.
Yeah.
And I think everyone kind of scoffed because it's like, oh, he's the funny writer, you know? And it's I think he's kind of showing people now like what he can do.
I mean, the Spider-Man one didn't surprise me because I mean Spider-Man, as serious as it can be,
yeah,
it's still
I mean,
a humorous book
for sure. But I think when you go back and you read that series and you look at, like, the J. Jonah Jameson issue and, like, some of that stuff, like, it's got its humor, but it's also got, like, its heart and its earnestness, too.
Okay.
Which I think a lot of people miss out on. I think people see a guy who works on a book that's rooted in humor, and you kind of get pigeonholed into that. Like, you're the funny guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The funny guy doesn't do serious stories. The funny guy doesn't write something like Daredevil. But I think, you know, I hope anyway that he's gonna have a great run, and he says he wants to stay on that book as long as he can. So if we can get, if this is the way Marvel gets back to like writers having extended runs on stuff, I'm in.
Yeah.
Because that's one of my biggest gripes, is I love comics so much, and I love Marvel. Marvel's my go-to. Like, even if I could never read, if I could only ever read one thing, you know, going forward, like, you have to pick a publisher. As much as I love Image and stuff Image is doing, like, there's that universal, like, lifelong appeal of, like, those superheroes you love.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite things with stuff like that is a guy like Dan Slott, or a guy like Chris Claremont, or a guy like Peter David.
That's a good point, because, I mean, you're usually seeing, what, between 10 and 20 bucks for a writer now?
Yeah, I mean, and the rate at which the creative teams change and get shuffled out and things move along, and it's just a bummer because I really do love those long, like, deep-seated runs where, like, Chris Claremont would bring something up and it doesn't pay off for another 3 years. Because you know he knows he's going to be on the book. Or like he knows, you know, he's got this plan in his head.
It's the long con.
Yeah, and I just wish Marvel would kind of go, and I guess, you know, I understand from a business sense it doesn't always work, but I wish they would go back to that model of just trusting writers and allowing them to, like, do what they're going to do.
I mean, that's the one thing I'll give, like, DC credit. Is they have done that
for a long time.
For a while now. I mean, Snyder was on Batman for what, 52
Look at most
issues?
Of those. Most of those new 52 books.
Yeah.
Snyder wrote essentially the whole run of Batman, right? Like, did anyone take over
no,
from
he,
him?
No, he wrote the whole run of Batman.
You had, I mean, I'm trying to think of which other. I know there was more. Those Superman books had long runs from creators. The other Batman books, like, there were casts here and there that rotated out. But they all had it, at the very least, they had, like, a year from a lot of these guys.
I mean, look at now, Tom King's on issue 63.
Yeah, and they're giving him 100
books.
105 issues of fucking Batman.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my biggest gripe right now, is I just wish we could get, or I wish they would allow creators to just flourish and, like, slowly build something.
Real quick, I did read here, just because I was flipping through Newsarama, there is another Black Hammer miniseries coming out.
Wow, he is growing that universe, man.
So, Black Hammer 45. So, from the world of Black Hammer comes a truly gripping tale of war and intrigue. With their orders to save a family of scientists from the clutches of the Nazi regime, the Black Hammer Squadron are on the move. As they encounter fantastical foes, their elite airmen also find themselves... with the aid from the hero Black Hammer, readers will find familiar. So,
do you think that universe gets so big at some point that someone just gives him an imprint to, like, run his own company, basically?
I mean, that's possible. The thing that
he really is growing that world.
The thing with Age of Doom, though, like I said, there is, if when you get to it, you'll notice what I'm talking about. He kind of. Is throwing all his books in a universe.
Really?
And not, I should say, they're all pocket universes within, like, his own universe.
It's, oh, okay.
Because, like, you remember that one issue? I was like, dude, they're flipping through these weird universes.
Yeah,
and
you said there's, like,
images
of
sweet tooth.
Huh.
Yeah, they go through and there's Sweet Tooth, but in this one of the last issues of this Age of Doom that came out, you see these clouds and it's writers in his head, and it's like, different universes of different books from different writers and all this stuff, and I think he's kind of getting into this weird, like, comic books are all intertwined, but I think he's going to start trying to maybe do some stuff with his certain characters.
Imagine if you end up with, like, Sweet Tooth meeting the kid from Descender. For as much as they're, like, almost the same story, kind of, just vastly different settings.
Sweet Tooth was what, Vertigo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember buying that book completely on a whim. Like, I didn't know anything about Jeff Lemire at that point. I didn't know anything about Sweet Tooth.
I just remember being like, what's this book with this kid with deer antlers?
Yeah, I was like, oh, this looks like the kid from the Fall Out Boy video. Like, I was like, what is this? And I found the first trade in like, the cutout bin. It was, like, a damaged copy that got smashed in shipping, so it was, like, $4. I was like, what the hell? $4? Worst case scenario is I just give it to somebody, and I ended up reading I blew through the first volume and completely fell in love with it.
Yeah, I gotta read that.
It's definitely worth it. It's nice too, because they just started releasing it in the deluxe soft covers.
And then Elliot's like, if you're reading Descender, you might as well just keep reading that instead of Sweet Tooth.
Yeah, finish that and then go to Sweet Tooth. But yeah, it is, and I never thought about it until Elliot pointed it out, but it is really funny how dramatically similar they are.
Okay. And...
Well, the reason we're here, we're going to talk about the first installment of the Comics Generally Book Club for 2019. We all read Next Wave by Warren Ellis, Wade von Grawbadger, with colors by... Who are the colors on that? You have your copy you're sitting there. It was the one thing I didn't think to write down.
So it's Stuart Immonen?
Stuart Immonen on art, Wade von Grawbadger on
the letters.
Inks. And then I think letters might be Joe Caramagna. Manya or Manga?
Eliopoulos.
There we go, yeah, Chris Eliopoulos.
I was like looking for the page, I'm like, where is it? Oh, right in front of me.
And,
yeah.
And Joe Caramagna. Caramagna.
Yeah, Jerk Caramagna and Eliopoulos on letters. And who was, did it say who did colors on this?
Dave McKeag.
There we go, Dave McKeag.
With Paul Mounts.
No, really?
Yeah, with Paul Mounts, yeah.
Yeah, Dave McKeag and Paul Mounts.
I did not realize Paul, I think Paul Mounts used to work on X-Men back in the day, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm just going to hang over here in the corner and murder everyone's name.
So I had read this before, so I was really looking forward to just being able to reread it. But as far as I know, neither of you have read it, right?
Yeah.
That's correct. I have not read it.
Not
until now.
After having finished it, your impressions? You like it? You didn't like it?
I loved it.
I loved it. I had a lot of fun with this book.
Nice. It's a really good time.
There's nothing I like more than... I don't have any problem with things that take themselves seriously, but what I really appreciate is taking the piss out of something.
Absolutely. And to the level that this book takes it is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Especially because, like, it lampoons, like, every aspect of superhero comics you can even think of, while still also managing to completely excel at being one of them.
Yes.
For as much as it shits all over itself, it nails being, like, a high-adventure, like, action superhero book.
I love that the group is... HATE, you know, you get your shield joke.
Yeah.
And then their ship, instead of a helicarrier,
yep.
is four submarines bolted together with rockets.
I was gonna say with rockets on it.
And then the guy's name is Dirk Danger.
Dirk Anger.
Oh, Dirk Anger.
So that way when
I'm sorry, I was thinking about his office door. Yeah.
When they show his office door, it's D period anger.
Danger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, general anger. Of course.
I love the team lineup. I love that it's all, like, either has-beens or, like, never worse. You've got Aaron Stack, the Machine Man. You've got Captain Universe, which he just calls himself the Captain.
Yeah.
Well, isn't Captain, he's the only, like, new one.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
As far as I know. Elsa Bloodstone, the Monster Hunter. Meltdown, a.k.a. Boom Boom from X-Force.
Which is, what, Tabby?
Yeah, Tabby. Yeah. Monica Rambeau, the Captain Marvel from the 80s, who was also known as Photon,
mm-hmm.
Whose mother is in the new Captain Marvel movie. She is one of Carol's like co-pilots, teammates.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they do. I can't remember. Monica Rambeau is Photon, but I can't remember the mother's name. But it's her last name is Rambeau, Rambeau.
Well, Monica Rambeau was also Captain Marvel at one point, right? In the 80s?
Yeah. She was Captain Marvel, and I think she changed her name to Photon after that.
That's right.
I
mean, even, like, one of the things that's really brilliant about this is they have this ridiculous story going on, and, you know, not only pulling, like, basically other random characters out of mothballs, but also almost all of the villains, too.
Yeah.
Like, all of the bad guys, even, like, the little minions. Like,
yeah,
everything
I
is,
mean,
is
Ellis,
pulled from
Ellis really goes the extra mile in this to... kind of garner as many like deep cuts as he can, and just what ridiculous thing can he throw at you next? And you go, well, there's no way he's gonna throw like Devil Dinosaur at me, and then Devil Dinosaur shows up in a top hat and a monocle,
yeah.
And you go, okay, well, I guess we're gonna go. We're going down that road.
And then you have a baby MODOK.
Yeah, there's Elvis MODOKs, there's baby MODOKs. Aren't there like some kind of Wolverine clones that look like Elvis too or something like that?
I think I saw something with the claws. But this is, I remember when I was reading this and I texted you, I was like, really? And you're like, what? And I'm like, submarines bolted together? And you're like, it gets more ridiculous. And then ages later, you get Fing Fang Foom in underpants.
Yeah, uh-huh. Dude. Fing Fang Foom wearing pants is maybe my favorite iteration of Fing Fang Foom in the comics.
They keep making a joke about how he has no genitalia.
I know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's got like a... He's cursed with like this burning desire to mate, yet he's got no genitalia.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like that. This book is absolutely, like, it's Ellis at his most, like, lighthearted, but also his snarkiest. Like, it's downright silly, but it's also, like, mean. Aaron Stack the whole time is just a jerk to any human he comes across.
And they shit on the captain the entire time.
There's a brilliant moment with Aaron Stack when everyone's like, you know what, you're shit. And he's like, you know what? I rode in a spaceship with the Celestials. And then they do a flashback to him with the Celestials.
And they're like, you're shit.
Yeah, they're all standing around them. And they're like, you have been traveling with us for ages. And you are shit.
Yeah, completely consider him a burden.
And then they drop him off at Earth on Earth because they don't want to hang out with him anymore.
What about when they show, so they reveal that, like, Aaron Stack / Machine Man, is his designation is like X-51. He's like the 51st prototype.
Right.
And I think someone comments like, what happened to all the other ones? And it's another flashback to a robot as a priest.
Yeah.
At a dinner with a woman. And he malfunctions and falls, I think, face down in his dinner.
And dies.
And is short-circuiting.
Oh, yeah, that's right here.
What is his name?
It's like Aaron Stack designation X-51 from the Dr. Abel Stack self-built sequence of sentient human combat robots. It's unknown what happened to the other 50, and it's like, I make you die with steamy electric mech bits. Now clack, clack, clack.
You know what his name is? His name is Father Blood.
Yeah.
Drench Robo Crush. And he falls face down in his food. Oh, God. What other... There was another real... There's a lot of really funny physical comedy in this book.
Oh, freaking... Aaron Stack was with the Celestials for 360 years.
You are shit.
You are shit.
Like, the use of slapstick is unbelievable. There's that scene towards one of the issues where Boom Boom is kicking a guy, and Machine Man's like, what are you doing? She goes, he's a cop. And then it comes to the next panel, it's her and Machine Man kicking the cop. And then there's another scene where I don't remember what Aaron Stack does to deserve it, but the scene ends with everyone on the team beating him with shovels.
Oh, right.
Oh, I think he says something sexist, doesn't he?
Probably.
Yeah, one of the general henchmen is the HR department from Beyond Corporation.
Yeah.
And it's a Broccoli Men. They're like what do they say? The Broccoli Men were plant-based androids derived from kelp running Fight Persona XP software. So they go and discover the field where they're growing all of these henchmen, and they start trying to dig them up to ruin the crop.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because the whole basic plot of the story, since we haven't gotten to it at this point yet, you jump in at the beginning of the story essentially in the middle of something already going on. You don't really know... It kind of clue you in pretty quick, but initially you're kind of lost where you're just like, am I not reading the right volume? And you find out that this team of misfits work for, obviously we mentioned the organization known as HATE, which is like a SHIELD type organization. But they find out that HATE is harboring all these, what is the phrase that he uses, like ultimate weapons of mass destruction?
Yeah.
Yeah, because
they're
funded by the Beyond Corporation.
Unusual weapons of mass destruction.
There we go. Yeah, the UWMDs.
I love this reference right here, when Elsa Bloodstone drives out of the ship, and then she lands on the HR department. She's like, Death Race 2000, President Frankenstein.
Yeah. Right, yeah, so when it starts off, it's like, it's the captain and Elsa hanging out at like a coffee shop because they're scoping out this evil headquarters from Beyond Corporation, who's like the corporate front for Silent, which used to be the opponent of HATE, and then HATE ends up becoming like basically funded by them, and there was like a little. Pretty funny little dig there saying, you know, like, how did a terrorist organization come to be, like, the owner of HATE? And Dirk Anger makes a comment about, well, it was an open bidding process, and, you know, this is all done through faith-based funding.
Dude, there's just, like, you could make a whole podcast in relation to this book just about, like, the deep references and, like, cultural jokes that Ellis makes in this thing.
But I think that was the only thing I was a little confusing up front, because it's like, And I hint that you know he does it on purpose, just because of how ridiculously convoluted some of these subplots get in the other comics. But yeah, it does get a little confusing of like what the role of Next Wave is. Essentially, all the Next Wave agents are like rogue elements of their cream of the crop agents who figure out the ultimate plans that Hate is actually being run by the bad guys.
And I mean, there may have been lead up in other books to this series, but I don't think that there was. I think that this was like a thing that Ellis pitched kind of on his own.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I just got to the page with Dirk Anger, and he's like, deploy the etheric loop recall telemecometer, and it's just a giant handheld telephone that goes over his head.
Oh, with like the head strap?
Yeah.
What was the scene? There's a scene in there when they're interrupting him during his like private time.
Is that when he's after he's already been killed and he gets the zombie switch activates?
No, before that he's like hanging out in this chair. Oh, where is it?
Is he wearing his grandmother's?
He's wearing the dress at the end of the first trade. Yeah.
No, there's one that's hold on, it's even better. I think it's after Fin Fang Foom.
It's amazing, too, to me, while you guys are looking for that, like, for as many jokes and as much silliness as Eminent puts into this book, as much as silliness...
That's the one. That's the one.
Oh, where he sits on the chair that's a giant...
He's got a giant pistol that's, like...
U-turns.
Yeah, the barrel is, like, U-shaped, so he's trying to shoot himself, and they interrupt him.
It is. There is that dark subplot of, like...
He's, like, repeatedly trying to kill himself
Dirk
throughout
Anger,
the entire...
Yeah, Dirk Anger multiple times trying to murder himself.
And he does, actually... He does succeed at one point.
Yeah.
By accident.
And then he... Right. And then he comes upon the unfortunate luck where he finds out that a Hate actually put a zombie chip in him.
Yeah. And
so when he dies, he immediately comes right back. Yeah. And is just mad.
General, I'm busy. General, it's about Next Wave's squad. This really isn't a good time when he's sitting on the big gun. But then that whole sequence, he tries to do it and it clicks and it doesn't shoot and he goes, I'm so alone.
And that's what I'm saying is, like, for as much, like, over-the-top absurdity as Ellis puts in this book, Eminem, like, translates it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the writer-artist relationship on this book is just... really, really impressive to me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's not an easy task. It's definitely like a tall order to come to an artist with a story like this and bring that many like elements into it.
Yeah.
And that much like physical comedy. I mean, this is something that would play as a cartoon for as much like physical like stuff as there is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dave McKay's colors do so like. So Eminent and Graw Badger are these two guys who have kind of been working together on stuff for years, where you had, just like in the 90s, you had guys like Jim Lee and Scott Williams, where anytime you saw Jim Lee drawing something, odds are Scott Williams was inking it. And you get that more often with like writers and artists, I feel like, but sometimes you get it with these, you know, a pencil or and a colorist, and you just find the right combination. My God, is it pop. It just makes everything look like Fin Fang Foom is like the brightest green.
Yeah.
Like everything just jumps off the page.
Yeah, the artwork in this all around is exceptional. Like there's a lot of breathtaking scenes.
There's a lot of really, really cool silent scenes, like where there's no dialogue at all. There's no onomatopoeia, there's no talking, nothing.
Towards the end, it's more when they are now they're trying to fight towards the center of the Beyond Corps headquarters, they just do like a montage and it's several full page
it's like two
panels
flashes, yeah.
Yeah, no, like you said, totally silent, but like just hilarious, ridiculous, like them in this like a huge battle scene just fighting the most ridiculous ridiculous thing.
Each splash page has its own caption of like Next Wave. It's
da
da da da da.
You talking about the Upside Down Doomcast?
Yeah.
Isn't that where they show the... Isn't there the fake Avengers or something like that, too?
Yeah.
The Paramounts?
Yeah, the Paramounts.
I love the... like, all the teams. Like, there's the surgery, Dr. Injectable, Dr.
Mm-hmm.
No Sexy, Dr. Meatball, Dr. Headless. I like the Vestry, though. Like...
What is that? Which one's the best street?
That's the Inquisitor, Father Payne, Red Rosary, Reverend Guilt. And,
they even bring
that horror.
Forbush Man shows up in this goddamn book.
Yeah.
Like 1960s Marvel, not brand Ech. Forbush Man pops back up.
But I think that's bringing that up is kind of hammers home another point about you were talking about the art. Is like not only is it beautiful, but they also stitch together a lot of different styles.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the cool
there
things...
There are some cool guest spots, too.
Yeah, and one of the cool things about Forbush Man is he gets offended by everyone, so he sends everyone to an alternate dimension. So you get, like, all these, like, crazy scenarios where, you know, for example...
It's almost like introspective, like, forcing these characters to kind of make, like, look at themselves in a weird way.
Yeah, but, like, Monica gets sent to, like, a weird, like... 60s, 70s era dimension
yeah.
that's like real, like
Elsa
old
Bloodstone
school.
Bloodstone goes to like a Mike Mignola drawn,
mm-hmm.
like Hellboy
yeah.
looking world. Literally could have, I mean, you could have told me that's a page from a Hellboy comic, and if I didn't know who Elsa Bloodstone was, I would buy it. Like, I would believe it all day.
No, that, I love that. I mean, that has to be Mignola.
Oh, it is. It
yeah.
is. I don't remember who else does guest spots, but I know he was one. When I first read it, like, jumped out immediately.
I just caught this other villain team, Sun King, the Midnight Man, Polestar, slightly creepy police woman, Behold the Homosexuality.
Wow.
That's the name of the team.
Oh, man.
I like the fake, like, Hulk. Like,
yeah.
His story.
The Paramounts. I forgot about that, man. And, like, going back to those silent fight scenes for a minute, just the for lack of a better word, the, like, fight choreography, especially, like, in the one, like, you mentioned, Mike, the big two-page, like, splashes leading through
mm-hmm.
the headquarters, but there's that really great scene, too, where it is, I think it's Elsa Bloodstone and Boom Boom are fighting, like, cybernetic robot samurai.
Yes,
but
yeah.
But not, like, Cyberai from The Flash, like, just... an army of robot samurai.
Yeah, the Samuroids.
And, like, just, it's gorgeous. It's just these amazing poses and, like, super intense action. And it really does, it feels so, and it feels, I feel like I'm saying cinematic a lot this episode between this and Guardians, but, like, it really does feel like it's being directed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I just keep flipping through and remembering stuff.
One of the things going back to, we were talking about the characters involved in it, and we talked about how the captain is one of the new, you know, one of the non-recycled characters.
Yeah.
So his story is pretty funny. You know, we were talking earlier, I think off mic, about all the different names that he went through and like his kind of hostile relationship with other heroes like Captain America and stuff like that. But his origin story is like, probably the best part.
Yeah.
And that is, he's from New York City, and he's like a drunk punk. And he runs into these two aliens, Spaffon and Squatrunt.
Is it the caption, or like the dialogue bubble when he's walking, like, instead of words, it just says, like, singing vaguely offensive Sex Pistols
yes.
songs?
Yes, that's it. So they're, like, they're walking around, and they see New York City, and they're like, wow, this place needs our help. We need a hero. So they, like, see him, and for some reason, they're like, we're going to...
It's almost like a mock-up of, like, the old Green Lantern.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the aliens.
Yeah. So, like, randomly, like, we're going to give this guy superpowers so that he can improve, like, help this community and turn things around.
Yeah.
And he immediately mistakes them for leprechauns because he's so drunk. And they give him, and once he gives them the superpower, he beats the shit out of them and then barfs on them.
And what's he say though after that? Something about like not getting the pot of gold. Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, because he thinks they're leprechauns. Beats him up, no gold, so he's all pissed off.
And it's, and I don't know what else I can even really say about it. I've pretty much blown through all my notes, but man, it's such a good story. And it made me so happy to go back and read through it again. Because it's one of those books where it's perfect to recommend to someone because it doesn't owe itself to anything else. Like, you don't have to read anything leading up to it. You don't have to read anything past it. It's essentially fully self-contained, 12 really, really fun issues.
Yep.
And it's one of those things you can kind of just give to anybody.
Yeah.
It's like, even if it's someone that's never read a comic before, like, if you're just a fan of comedy...
You know, oh, you like Venture Brothers? Read this. Or like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
You like, you know,
I was
whatever.
Just about to say Venture Brothers with the pterodactyl suit, man.
The the tarot suits or whatever.
Yeah. I like how they drop bears on people.
Yeah. That was another good one. Because I remember hearing that. So drop bears are like a joke that Australian people use on Americans all the time.
They just use it on tourists.
Yeah. And they tell people that you have to watch out for the drop bears, so then you get all these idiot Americans walking around looking straight up waiting for a bear to fall and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I remember hearing about it years ago from, I think from that comedian Jim Jefferies.
Yeah.
I think he told us a really funny story about it. So when those popped up for the first time, like that absolutely, I popped for that big time.
Another thing that was really even the stuff in between the covers, like the hate mail section, was hilarious. Like they have this ongoing thing with the Lettermatic 7053 that's like answering all these questions, and like I feel like the first panel is like them getting questions from like old historical celebrities and things like that, like getting a message from like Johannes Gutenberg and stuff like that. And then this, you know, Lettermatic 753 gets replaced by the Lettermatic Extreme, and then like some sort of like HR bot or something like that. So there's like a whole bunch of stuff in between that that's just super funny. And then the theme song.
Yeah, you brought this to our attention. I knew that there was a theme song because it's in the book, like they show the lyrics and things. But there is an actual music, like theme song to this for real. You said you found it where? On MySpace?
Actually, if you just look up Next Wave Agents of Hate, you can see it, find it on YouTube. But yeah, they originally posted it to MySpace.
That's really funny. Yeah, and for as many times as I've read this book in the past, and as long as I've owned it and told people about it, I was today years old when I found out that was a real theme song.
Another rando, hilarious kind of reference in this. So we're talking about one of the other. So they just kind of like this team. Once they get together, they find out the master plans because Tabby steals the plans from the corporation and figures out what's happened. They switch. Find out they're on the wrong side of the team. They steal the what was it called? The Shockwave Rider.
Yeah, that's their ship.
Which
throughout the course of the book is slowly like degrades in condition.
Yeah, yeah,
it's,
and
like,
it's
smoking by the end of the book.
And they make out a point. They make it a point to illustrate the fact that it's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
Yeah,
because
Doctor
it's
Who reference.
Nice. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a Doctor Who reference.
Exactly, and it's got it's.
There's actually before just to interrupt you really quick. Before I forget about it, Dan Slott writing FF. There's a huge Doctor Who reference the exact same way because he's a huge Doctor Who nerd. So like. They move, you know, obviously in the comics, like Peter Parker owned the Baxter building for a long time and then lost it because, you know, Parker luck. So he sells the Baxter building to like this other team of like fake heroes or whatever. So when Reed and Stu and everybody get back to the 616, the Thing invites them all to go live in Yancey Street with them. The Thing owns the apartment building on Yancey Street. So at one point, like Sue walks into the house, and it's literally this like very small, like 3-floor walk up kind of a apartment building, and Sue walks in, and it's like the size of like a NASA like research facility, and she flips out. She's like, "What did you do? Buy the whole block?" And he goes, "No, we just made it bigger in here," and like so he created quantum universe technology to make like a pocket. They folded pocket universes over each other. Inside of the Yancey Street apartment building.
Yeah, and here they reference the... it's powered by the zero-point squirt drive containing 5 Tesseract zones, and that's what makes it bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. So I thought that was fun. But, okay, so anyway, so then they get together and they start fighting their way through the Beyond Corporation's schemes and...
machinations.
Yeah, right. And then one of them is... you mentioned this earlier... Dread Rorcanu, Lord of the Dark Dimension.
Which is obviously a nice little takeoff of the Dread Dormammu from Doctor Strange fame.
Yep. And so the Beyond Corporation wants this guy's help so that they can loan out the Mindless Ones.
Yeah, that's a fun part of the book too.
Which is hilarious. And he's like asks him what he wants in exchange, what Dread Rorcanu wants in exchange. He wants 100 Earth dollars. And basically wants to get hooked up with all of the non-blonde suicide girls.
Yeah, that's right.
He does ask
for how about that.
Dates the book a little bit.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So that was a nice little,
oh,
nice
man.
Little bit.
Dude, what a fun book!
I love mm-hmm. this splash page here. Though.
It's unbelievable.
No, but like it says, because it's going through that whole thing with Next Wave and explains stuff, and it's the
yeah.
final one. It's like Next Wave. Blatantly wasting your money since 2006.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they did
the best part are those like those little taglines, man.
They did an interesting thing there. I didn't get it at first, but when I went back and looked at some of the you know some of the write ups about it, there was a thing that they ran in the middle of it where basically it came out as like a coloring book, and so people
oh,
would
okay.
like people would color it and then submit their colorings or something like that, and they judged it and then gave out prizes.
Yeah, yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
Oh man.
So I missed that part like at first because like they made reference to it in the hate mail and I didn't understand what was going on, but I thought that was cool.
Oh yeah, there they are, the Elvis MODOKs.
Yeah, the Elvis MODOKs. There's a lot of really weird ones.
Dude, like the bondage midgets with
giant scissors.
Yeah,
oh,
giant
wait.
Scissors and Iron
oh, no,
Man mask.
That's Aaron Stack's arm. Never mind.
But that's the thing, though. I think this is something that, like, you just every once in a while just read, and you'll just find a new, just like, just
yeah.
just Easter egg, just
it's
buried
like, yeah,
in.
Yeah, it's like watching your favorite like comedy movie, like one of those movies where like there's so much packed into it that there's it's almost got like infinite replay value, so to speak. Because I feel like you do. You read through it, and like on the second time reading through it, I focused on so many different things than I did the first time. Like, there's so many little jokes that, like, maybe I got this time that I didn't last time. Just by virtue of, like, time passing and experiencing other, you know, movies and TV shows and things, you find all those different reference points. And I'd be really interested, too, to find out if, I'm sure someone's done it, go online and find, like, a master list of, like, the references and, like,
yeah.
the Easter eggs and stuff in it. Because I'm sure it exists. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. No, you finish your thought.
No,
sorry.
That was... No, I was... You're good.
I just love why the Silent Corporation being ran, or say, beyond being ran by Devil Dinosaur.
In a smoking jacket, though.
But I love his, like, his reasoning why. Because he hates human beings because he hated Moon Boy. He's like, Moon Boy hated me. Moon Boy had to die. Moon Boy tasted bad and gave me some considerable rectal distress.
As a resentment for making him sick to his stomach.
I hope you and your friends aren't quite so hard on my guts.
Oh, man.
But I love, they straight up just, it's the picture, it's straight up the Kirby.
Yeah, it is. That is absolutely a Kirby panel. Like, they
yeah.
just took it and maybe recolored it.
I think that's from the first appearance of Devil Dinosaur and Moon Boy.
Yeah, if that's not it, they at the very least colored it to make it look like it.
Yeah.
But it sure looks like the panel to me, for sure. But I would call this the first book club. I'd call it a success. I think we all had a good time with the book, man. And I'm really glad, like I said, for you guys having read it for the first time, it made me real stoked to hear how much everybody enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a very easy read.
Yeah, not too dense. There's a lot going on, but it's not, it doesn't feel like a chore.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. You can get through it pretty easily if you want, but you can always stop and just kind of dig into stuff if you want. So that's what's fun, you know, if you really like to kind of take something apart.
I blew through this, so, I mean, I feel like most people that take this recommendation will do. I mean, this thing's going to be on my shelf.
Yeah.
It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, it's definitely a mainstay. Like, I bought it, and actually I have it in the two single volumes, so I'd really like to get the collected version at some point. But for Comics Generally this week, we'll close out with some plugs real quick. You can find us in the same places you can always find us. Blake and I are on Instagram. He's It's Blake, you guys. I'm Wax Sabbath, all one word. You can find us Comics Generally on podcast, or Comics Generally on Instagram. Comics Generally pod. Wow, fuck me. You can find us in all the same places as normal on Instagram. I'm Wax Sabbath. Blake is It's Blake, you guys. You can find the show on Instagram at Comics Generally Podcast. You can find us Comics Generally Podcast on Facebook and on Patreon as well. As always, three tiers of support. $2, $5, $10, $5. You can submit a suggestion for an episode topic, and we'll do our damnedest to build an episode around it. $10, you get premium content like D&D games that we're gonna have one of those coming up in the future, which will be a lot of fun. We've done kind of old like quiz show, comic book game type things, movie commentaries, episode commentaries. Basically anything we can do to kind of screw around and have fun with.
When's the D&D one?
I don't know. We haven't actually set a firm date for that one. I think Chrissy's actually going to come back for another episode, and then we're going
to
do
some
more bonus content.
I have to figure out.
Yeah, we'll get it all worked out. Book Club continues with February. We're going to be tackling Hellboy. When we find out exactly what books we're doing, we're going to let you know. But it's going to be, we figured with the movie coming up, it's a good time to dig into some Hellboy and kind of learn a little bit more about the lore of the character and what's going into the film.
It'll be the stories that are involved with the Blood Queen.
Okay. So we'll have probably two stories for you. But we'll, like I said, we'll get back to you on that for sure. I want to thank everyone for now 21 episodes and counting of this show, which is not something that I ever expected to. I didn't expect to do 10 of them, let alone 21 of them. So here's to 21 more. Mike, I want to thank you as always for coming on. It's always appreciated.
Hey, the pleasure is all mine.
We always have a blast with you.
Yeah, thanks.
I think that is pretty much it. We talked about our plugs. Oh, we got to thank our patrons.
Get on that bad boy.
Speaking of, we've got one right here. Mike Grabsky is one of our patrons. I want to say thank you to Mike, so I appreciate you kicking us a few dollars every month.
Of course.
Do you have a live suggestion, something?
I think Mike's on for the premium episodes, actually.
Oh, okay.
My pleasure.
We're going to thank Todd Pincombe. We're going to thank The Screaming Moist. I'm sorry, I'm just going to call you that because that's what it shows up as, and I don't know who it is or who they are. Maybe it's more than one people. But we appreciate you donating. The Aurelia Theater Company, our friends Carl and Katie Mizell, David Wilson from Downpour Creative, and our good friend Adam Malinowski. So if you want to subscribe to the Patreon, you can. Again, as I mentioned earlier, $2, $5, $10, whatever you want to donate is fine by us. We appreciate it either way. With that, we'll sign off. We'll leave you with the Next Wave theme song. So you can, we'll lead out with that. You get to enjoy that on your ride home. So thank you guys for coming by. I hope to see you on episode 22. You guys have a good night.
You too.
That's your. Oh, yeah. You're on this show too. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
It's like Shakespeare, but with lots more punches. It's like Goethe, but with lots more crunches. Like Titanic, but the boat's still floating. No, it's not. The motherfucker is exploding. Organize your sock drawer, Elsa!
is gonna speak with an accent